we want to invite you to the Intentional Motherhood Retreat 2025. For the past 2 years, hundreds of mothers from around the country have gathered with us for a weekend of worship, teaching, and connection, and really to seek God together. And we can't wait to do it all again at this year's Motherhood Retreat, this time in Portland, Oregon, October 23rd through 25th. We know that motherhood is both beautiful and it's hard. It's both life-giving and exhausting, and it's full of both joy and sacrifice. It stretches us and forms us more than anything else. This retreat really is a spiritual formation retreat for us mothers. We aren't going to give you a bunch of tips and tricks for how to be a better mom, but we are going to press into how motherhood gently leads us to spiritual formation, how relationships are essential for the journey, and how our connection with God spills over to our connection with our families. This retreat is for women who desire to be mothers someday, all the way to grandmothers and anyone in between. Mothers of babies and toddlers, young children, teenagers, and even adult children. This intergenerational gathering is a chance for all ages and stages of mothers to learn from one another, to encourage each other, and to simply be together. Because motherhood isn't meant to be done alone. The late Dallas Willard said spiritual formation can't be a private thing. It is a matter of whole life transformation. You need to seek out others in your community who are pursuing the renovation of the heart. And that is exactly what we are going to do together. So come join us October 23rd through 25th for the Intentional Motherhood Retreat in Portland, Oregon. We can't wait to see you.
You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation.
So, that's the beginning of this episode, is a...
How to do sourdough cheese, jalapeno cheese
jalapeno bread. Cheese.
Merry, our Christmas cheese gift forward. To you.
Jalapeno cheese bread.
Elizabeth will make it to anybody who gives a new email address.
I think when it comes to jalapeno cheese, sourdough,
I don't have to ask.
The more jalapeno and the more cheese. What were you going
to
say?
I don't have to ask for it as my Christmas present anymore because you make it anyway.
You keep making it.
I've been asking for it for Christmas the last 5 years, I think.
Yeah. I got home last night and forgot that she had made some for the other party that we had at Sal and Talia's house. And I was so delighted to find half a loaf of cheddar jalapeno bread. It's so different. It hits very different.
It is.
I like it.
You know what?
Like
it tastes really. It tastes really good with homemade jam. What? Toasted.
I didn't think about that.
And put homemade jam on.
Oh, she got that from her father, who puts jam on his grilled cheese sandwiches.
I like that though. That's good. That's
so good. Sweet. He put my mom's raspberry jam in between his grilled cheese. He'd open up his grilled cheese sandwich and put raspberry jam on.
That was
so
good.
I've been putting
that
on my. I have a roasted apricot jam that I make. It's made with honey, so it's just really vanilla. It's really rich.
I got to try some of this.
On the jalapeno cheese bread was amazing.
See, she'll probably give you one. She has a bunch of them.
You have extra.
I made a ridiculous.
Made
and actually.
You made a whole bunch of them, right?
Scarlett and I made that one.
Scarlett helped.
So yeah, she owes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
She'll tell Scarlett that's what you want for Christmas. She can come over and get
Scarlett,
it from Diane.
Scarlett will like not stop. She's like, I'm buying you a present, Dad. I was like, sweetheart, you don't have to spend money on me. She was insistent.
Yeah.
Upon she's real excited.
I can't wait. I'm just
tell her if she wants to make some more money to do what she did last year. I'll pay her to come help me wrap the stockings.
Oh, she'd do it.
Okay.
Well, welcome
Diane
back to the
said, don't take advantage of Scarlett. She always gets asked to work. I go, I'm going to pay her. I said,
well, you overpay.
I'll overpay.
You're not taking advantage of her.
Well, we're going to keep all that in. Everybody, that's the what you're capturing is what happens before we just say we're going to start the episode.
It's what happens while Brooke tries to get us to stop talking. So
I don't
that
mind
we
it.
But there's a marital problem is that he says his jalapeno cheese bread is better than yours because he puts in more cheese and more. He actually criticized you the other night when we were at the community group.
It was behind your back.
He goes, I said, Elizabeth made jalapeno cheese. He goes, mine's better. I put in more cheese.
I don't know if I said mine's better.
Really?
Fully,
you just said. You add more cheese and jalapeno.
It's okay. It's okay, babe. What is a lot to you is minimum to most other people. And that's been the truth of our whole marriage. She'll say like a lot of something and like, She's always buying just enough. And you and I are the same on this, Phil.
I know.
Like, yes.
It's like you got to buy extra. A little bit extra. Like, no. Why are we going to run out of
stuff? You always want to have extra.
I know. Well, she doesn't.
By the way, I put in a request for him to bring me back a few of LaDonna Moser and Blaine's peanut butter ball Christmas cookies. Oh, yeah. I love those.
Or they're dipped.
He'll probably, he might forget. So if you remember.
Okay. They're dipped in chocolate Oreos.
Oh, I yeah.
I don't so think she'd made those.
No one understands this on the podcast, but my family comes from a rich history. My dad would cook. My mom bakes. Their stuff. Yeah, I mean, the level. It's delicious. All about flavor. I mean, if, yes. As long as you're not concerned about health
or calories,
or calories,
exactly. Everyone,
it's amazing.
Wanted to be invited to your family's Christmas
my
open
parents
house
do Christmas oh, parties, yeah. And that was the thing. And to date, I think even now, my mom still has set up 7 Christmas trees or 8 at the home right now.
Or 10.
By the way, she's a widow and she lives by herself and she has 7 Christmas trees at her house. God. It's a lot of work is all to say. Yeah. That's all I'm highlighting is that it's so much work. But our kids, I mean, anybody that goes there, it is like you enter into a different world. So
just, you know, remember me.
I'll remember you. I'll just say, hey, mom, I need some extra. She won't even ask. She'll be like, she'll be thinking that I just want to take a bunch of extra home. Mm-hmm. And then I'll sneak some your way.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. She could also just listen to this podcast and learn what I'm doing, but I wouldn't expect it. Anyway, welcome back, everybody. Today, we're actually going to do a marriage Q&R. We wanted to respond to questions about marriage. And I think as we have some of our retreats coming in May, sad news, they all sold out. They are sold out, which I wasn't surprised with how fast everyone was grabbing tickets, but we're just honored. So can we just say thank you? Yeah. 1, 2, 3.
Thank you
to everybody who is like coming out and spending the time, the money, the resources. Yeah. Brasada, where we're going to be, is not an inexpensive place. And we wanted this to be an experience. We really wanted to get away and have it be something for each couple that is not only hopefully life-giving in a spiritual sense and in an educational sense, but also just that the spot is beautiful, that the food is wonderful.
So beautiful.
Yeah, we were just there the other night. We have a friend that lives in that area and just driving all the Christmas lights.
I would say, I wish we had the marriage retreat right now. It's just gorgeous. Yeah. Right. It's like a scene out of
Christmas
a movie.
Maybe that's magical. What we need to do is marriage retreat.
Do one in December, early December.
Yeah, maybe next year.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. So if you like that idea, please connect with us on social media, marriage retreat in December. But yeah, we just thank you for everyone that signed up for that. Also, thanks for everyone that's rated and subscribed to the podcast. If you haven't, please take a second to do that. So helpful. And remember, we're on YouTube now, so you can watch all this if you'd like. But we want to get into some of your questions. And true to form, if you follow the podcast at all, and if you're not, I'll let you know. These are questions that I've barely looked at, but questions that I definitely have not let anyone else look at.
Because you never do.
I never do. And Phil is still not bitter
about
that.
I'm still bitter.
But I also think I've scanned them quickly to see that I think you will all do a great job. We'll all, I think, have some things to add. So maybe we should start by also saying marriage is not easy. It's beautiful, but it's not easy. And we all know that. And so I think even as we prepare for the marriage retreats, this isn't going to be, even today as we talk about some of these questions, this isn't going to be a, hey, we've got this all figured out, so just do what we're doing and everything's going to be fine. Yeah. That's not our experience. We don't even feel like that's a helpful way to communicate. And so we're going to share stories of our life, stories of where we've learned, I think more stories of failure than successes. But we also just want to connect with you on some of the things that you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. So with that, are you guys okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
I'll start with one that's not directly to marriage, but is involved in every marriage. So here's the question. And it's not even a question. It just says in-law challenges and spouse roles.
In the two different things.
Really two different things. Not even a question. So let's start with in-law challenges. In-law challenges. Let me be the first to take this one. I'd like to start, everyone. I've been waiting for my moment. And actually, the person who submitted this question was Brooke. No, I'm just kidding. But in-law challenges, I think that's a really interesting one. Obviously, there's not enough clarity to understand exactly what the challenges are. But any thoughts real quick on in-laws and challenges with in-laws or just general principles or things that we've learned along the way?
I feel like it's hard to answer without any specifics around what the challenges are, because who knows if this person's saying that because the in-laws are like
wonderful
trying to run their life and not letting them leave and cleave, and or they're just like they don't have a great relationship.
Well, it's obviously in-law challenges, so there's obviously tension there.
Probably some conflict.
So I feel like the only thing that comes to my mind that I can maybe say with certainty is that when there are different difficult dynamics with in-laws, it's you and your spouse that have to learn how to communicate. Yeah. You're not going to change his adult parents or her adult parents. If you are like, so if it's the daughter-in-law who asked this or the son-in-law, like they're not your parents. It wasn't your family culture. It doesn't mean you can't influence it over time, but you're not going to be able to fix it directly. But I think the most important thing is that you and your spouse are able to talk about it, that you're able to, you have to remember that it's your spouse's parents. So how you talk about it matters, not just venting all of your frustrations, but being able to open the lines of communication to be able to talk with your spouse and say, hey, this is hard for me. Like this maybe feels really normal for you because you grew up in it, but this is really hard for me. And here's why. Can we talk about it? So that you guys can approach it unified versus being ununified and the problems with the in-laws or with your parents or whatever it might be end up ripping your marriage apart.
I was going to maybe agree and just say one of the most common challenges is when one spouse has a really hard time with the in-laws, but maybe the spouse who is connected to those in-laws doesn't have any awareness of it.
Yeah.
And that creates a lot of very unhealthy tension. Because essentially that one spouse kind of feels alone. And so I know we've seen that a lot with just different friend dynamics, with different friend groups. And, you know, that's a very common thing. But I'd say as much as you can do to get on the same page and like try to hear your spouse. And I know it's really hard to even maybe hear that your parents who maybe you didn't see these things. I think it's hard if you don't see those things, but it's hard to hear that sometimes. So I think doing your best to listen and be open. But I agree. This is a hard one to maybe respond to. But any thoughts, Phil and Diane, really quick before we go to the next
one? No, I think Elizabeth said it brilliantly. I think when there's tension, the most important thing is you don't allow that to divide the two of you, because this becomes the primary relationship. Genesis 2:24, a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. So this is a new family unit. And you're commanded to honor your parents, both husband and wife. And that's a whole nother subject for another time. But I think that the important thing is that it's a discussion. And if one of them's got a real burden, like I'm feeling really hurt by your parents, that needs to be talked about in love. And the one who has the biological tie to their parents has to be not defensive. That's my mom and dad you're talking about.
Yeah.
Then you're going to be in an argument and Satan will have won. Because now not only is there the original problem that you started talking about, it's still there. And now you've got a problem between the two of you. So I think you're totally right. I think so I would just say there's two things there. Don't let it divide the two of you. And that's where you're going to need to pray together and then listen to each other. And this is where I'm married to Diane, who listens to me really well. I don't listen to her as well as she listens to me. But I think listen to each other and what you said, Elizabeth. That's
And then
you may have to get some wisdom from counsel on how to handle it if it's really sticky. Yes. Yeah. Like we've talked about this before on our podcast. There is a time to appeal to a parent with respect and honor about a particular thing. You know, but even that's got to be done prayerfully and carefully, because they may not be ready to receive it. It might be the right thing to do in an ideal world, but it's not the wisest thing to do in the situation. It's better to pray and wait, you know?
I think we also have to remember that in relationships, there is a time to absorb the negativity or the difficulty or the jealousy or the disappointment that you have in the relationship. And, you know, I constantly think of Jesus' response, so the opposite of my instinctive response, my flesh response, when in 1 Peter 2, it says that talking about Jesus, when reviled, which would have been, you know, harsh, he did not revile in return.
Right.
But how? Because he entrusted himself to the Father.
That's
and
right.
So it was, I don't need necessarily the love of my, or the relationship with the in-laws, or the respect of the in-laws that I would hope for and that would be ideal, because I can entrust myself to the love of the Father. So there is that absorbing, you know, mm-hmm. as we grow more mature, hopefully we're able to absorb other people's pains and idiosyncrasies more and more. But I say all that from a very safe standpoint, because I think I had kind of the ideal mother-in-law and father-in-law. Bill and Ruth Comer are now with Jesus, but they set a tone for me of relationship that I wanted to copy as closely as possible and offer that to my kids-in-law, you, Brooke, my daughters-in-law. And the tone she set was total acceptance. There was never a critical word about any of us. I don't even think she allowed it to go pass into her prefrontal cortex of, oh, Diane's really blowing it in this area. She just refused. She just decided to love us. And she did a really good job with it without being, you know, she wasn't an imposing person. She was pretty gentle. But I felt so amazingly seen and accepted by her. And I mean, so that's ideal, right?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
absolutely ideal when, so, and I also think that the person asking this question is probably younger, talking about her older in-laws. You can learn from people's mistakes.
Yeah.
Say, I'm going to do this differently. And I think I'll get different results because of it. It's no guarantee. I knew no older friends of mine who are marvelous, wonderful people who have in-laws who, you know, younger in-laws, spouses to their kids who reject them. So it's people are really complicated.
Tricky. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. It's so tricky. Yeah. Just do anything, but just don't work with your in-laws. Anyway, let's move on to the next one. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. I love you guys. Okay, forgiving. This is a great one. Forgiving when one is overstimulated or at capacity and responds in anger to the other. So how to forgive when one or both are overstimulated at capacity and respond in anger towards the other spouse. We don't know anything
what to
about
do
that.
when one spouse responds in anger.
When one is overwhelmed.
Yeah, like so, what do you do? Like, what does that forgiving look like? I think obviously because you can have only so many words, we can add a couple of our own, you know, ideas about that. But I could say like, well, what does it look like for us when one is overstimulated? Well, the interesting thing that's been very helpful that we don't do enough, but is when we are overstimulated or at capacity, which right now in our season of life is very
all the time.
Yeah. We laugh because if not, we cry. So, but is to say, like, there's a lot of times that I'm irritated or frustrated around Elizabeth, but not at her, and vice versa. And so I think that's actually been something that's been really helpful is to remind her at moments or her to me, hey, I'm not
grumpy with you.
I'm not grumpy with you. I'm grumpy around you.
Yeah.
Or I'm not irritated.
Sally taught us that.
With you. Yeah. Around you. And that has been so helpful it's helpful just in the sense of if you are overstimulated and it's not the other person's fault or it's not because of something that's going on there, I think that reassurance is always very helpful. Mm-hmm. And like, okay, we're okay. They're just having a moment. They need some space. Yeah. And I think that just clarifies for the other person, like, hey, this isn't necessarily personal. It doesn't solve all the problems, but I'm just saying that is one tool that has been very helpful for me, for us.
Yeah. I mean, answering the question in a roundabout way, but I would wonder, at least I know this is common in our case, that often that can become a pattern or during different seasons that can happen a lot. Where there's just constant overstimulation and maybe one spouse, their nervous system is just more reactive or maybe it's both of you. And I think there has to be time carved out for you to be able to talk about what is happening on a regular basis and to be able to put some sort of plan together that you both agree to. You're not going to follow it perfectly 100% of the time. But if we're going to be able to be one and parent together in oneness, we have to have a plan for when either one of us or both of us mm-hmm. is overstimulated, is over-responding, is not handling stuff well, where we can either like tap each other out, like, okay, you clearly need a break. I'm doing okay. You're out. I'm in. Like, not in a shameful way, but like, hey, we're going to mm-hmm. partner together. Or some sort of plan for when that happens. That is helpful in the reoccurring hurt that can happen when you don't have a plan in place or you don't have a language around what's happening. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, man, every time they're mad at me, every time they're overstimulated, they're freaking out at me. Like, we immediately take it as personal if we haven't had space to be able to communicate about it.
Yeah, but it makes it super, I mean, because the question or the thought is forgive, how do you forgive? Yeah. I think you have to make the choice, but I also think one of the things that's super helpful is learn when you're overstimulated, mm-hmm. learn what that feels yeah. like, learn what you're acting like.
What are
like.
The signs?
What are those signs? Yeah, like learn that that is a thing. There's a lot of people that move through the world and they're not even aware that mm-hmm. that's what's actually going on is there's been a series of events or maybe different things that have happened that have elevated your nervous system to a point to where you're like yeah. overwhelmed. And then you start responding and reacting in different ways. And so I think part of our journey is like learning when that is, knowing what it is, knowing maybe like? How to stay away from it even. Like mm-hmm. what are those things that do trigger those parts of me? Mm-hmm. And just being aware of that, I think that's really helpful.
So yeah. are you talking about self-awareness, aware of your own mounting
yeah, I'm saying,
tension?
Yeah, just like yes. learning first.
Okay.
But like we'll good. Talk about forgiving, right? But I think one of the ways you start, forgiveness is huge. You need to apologize for those moments when you're overstimulated, when you react. I think you need to, just like we've talked about many times, you yeah. need to apologize and ask forgiveness. Mm-hmm. At the same time, as a way to not continue unintentionally that hurt, you need to learn how do you actually move through the world? Are you connected with these parts yeah. of you when you're completely overwhelmed and shut down? And that's been really helpful as well. And we don't have this dialed by any means. I think we go in and out of like crazy moments. We've had a couple of weeks where it's just like everyone seems to be just dysregulated and off. And like, that's what it feels like. That's what it's been like. And so I had a trip in the middle of all this, and that gave me enough time to step away, to calm down in like a nervous system sense. Yeah. To come back and to be like, okay, I can see a little more clearly. I can be a little bit more present. I feel like I'm learning more each day about how I'm impacted by it. So yeah. anyway, lots of details on that.
As most of you know by now, this entire podcast was made possible by the generosity of our legacy builders. Intentional is a crowdfunded nonprofit made possible by the generosity of everyday, ordinary people like you and like me. Yes, we have some people who give monthly to Legacy Builders in a large dollar amount, but we desire to invite a whole new group of people to give at $10, $25, or even $30 a month. If you're like me, you most likely already pay $20 a month for Netflix, $10 a month for Apple Music, $5 a month for Spotify, and various offerings. Would you consider giving monthly to Intentional at $5 or even $10 a month? Our dream is to see ordinary people step up and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families all over the world. So as you listen to the podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us as God is stirring in your heart? Will you partner with us, even if it's just for a few dollars a month? Thank you so much for considering joining. Enjoy the rest of today's episode. And if you're interested, go to our website, intentionalparents.org, and click on Give.
I would also add, if you're the one who's becoming dysregulated, I think that earlier when I had four kids at home vying for attention, at one point, two horses, two dogs, two cats,
and four kids.
Well, we got the second dog and the cats for Elizabeth.
That's
and then
right.
got bored with the dog and then got bored with the cats and we yes. ended up with all okay. of them. Because she was into her horse. But anyway.
Side story. Okay, oh but there gosh. Were times when I would just...
Very nice parents.
Feel like I was losing it. But yes. I wanted Phil to notice without me saying anything. I wanted him to see the signals that I was
That's fun.
Doing too much.
Oh, I
and
love
then,
that.
And, you know, obviously that is.
Keep talking. I didn't know this. Yeah.
So, honest moment here. And I just remember feeling indignant that he wasn't rescuing me from basically too much going on.
Yeah.
In fact, more than that, he was generally rather oblivious and throwing a few of his own demands in there at the same time. Requests in there at the same time.
I love how that moved from demands to requests.
But if I would have one thing I could go back and do is exactly what you were saying, Brooke. Yeah. I would begin to recognize the signs in myself and then be clearly communicating before I was ratcheted up too far, clearly communicating to me, honey, I'm real close to the edge. Just warning here. You could even do it with humor. Warning here. You know, blink, blink, blink. I'm about ready to implode. In which case, I think
he says this to me all the time.
Okay. I wish that I had done that instead of making. So I would then, on top of everything else, be furious at Phil for saying something like, "What's the matter with you?" Which is an unwise thing to say.
I'm just laughing at how much.
I think to which I would reply, "Are you seriously asking me that?"
Yeah, we've never had this dynamic. So interesting. Interesting that. It's interesting how generational patterns follow so quickly.
Here we go.
It's so interesting. I'm learning a lot right now.
Well.
So I think, you know, maybe if you're seeing your spouse begin to, you know, get to the close to the edge, maybe our stance ought to be, how can I actually help that person right now?
Yeah.
Instead of blame, instead of being annoyed that they're bothering you with their emotionalism, just, you know, we are one. We love each other. We actually really do, even when we don't act like it sometimes. And just, there is a point that it was wrong of me to expect Phil to rescue me. On the other hand, we can watch it in each other and see signs and just be that loving person. So for me, I love, one of my love languages is, you know, affection. Just in that moment, a little bit of, you know, affection to just calm me down, or I'm over responsible. And I think you're that way too, Elizabeth. So we bring it on ourselves, and where it's responsible sounds like such a good word, but where it's no longer a good thing, where it's now these self-imposed rules and standards that you're actually not capable of in that moment.
I'm not touching this with a 10-foot
pole. So having Phil give me, as he's often done, remind me that I don't have to do everything.
No.
And even step in and help is like a cure, is an easy way to, I don't know what it is, kind of deflate some of that.
Yeah.
Angst that's building up. I'm sure there are much better words, but it does make it feel like it deflates a little bit. Oh, I'm not by myself.
Yeah.
Phil's coming alongside me. He's helping me. And in our case, I would say it was generally me who got overwhelmed. And when Phil is overwhelmed, he gets a little bit more
snippy. He gets snippy.
I like the word directive. He gets very directive, which might be
that's
also
nicer
bossy.
Than aggressive.
Yes, yes. And so for me to be able to say, okay, this is Phil because he has not had a break.
Sure.
He really hasn't had a break.
But you have a lot of capacity. It's hard to get you to that spot.
That's right.
If you're there, there's problems.
Did
you notice how she said, or even help? She's told me before that you help a lot more than I ever helped.
Yeah. Well, speaks to the other part of the question, roles, spousal roles. Yeah. I think that I had rigidly locked us into roles when we were raising our kids. In my mind, I said to myself, Phil's working full time, plus. And I get to, for most of the years of kids at home, I didn't work at all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, outside the home.
You worked harder than inside the home.
So I took on not only the traditional wife roles, but a whole bunch of Phil's more traditional roles because he was working legitimately and providing for our family. But I think that was a great ideal, but it didn't work out well in real life. In real life, I got resentful quite often that I was overdoing.
And you didn't talk about it.
I didn't
never
talk
complained.
About it because I thought I was supposed to do it that way.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was working 50, 60 hours a week. Yeah. I was loving every second of it, which made it probably even harder for you.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you were by my side as a pastor. But,
yeah. So, I mean, I think the roles thing is the biggest caution I would have is don't make it too rigid. That it has to be fluid. Like, well, if even, roles is who does what.
It's interesting because I'm looking here and another question is like addressing household chores. I work part-time but am still expected to do primary print. Did you just submit another question? Oh my gosh. Elizabeth.
Before you go to that one, can I say something about this one?
No, I'm saying these are all kind of tied together. So I was going to ask, what's your wisdom on this? I'd love to hear where you're coming from.
We've been on this one for a long time. I just have a scripture I wanted to share. So yes. I think the original question was, sounded to me like, forgiving. What do I do when my spouse is overstimulated?
Yeah.
How do I respond to that? Mm-hmm. And so that's something that I think every marriage deals with that. Mm-hmm. And then depending on your personalities, you know, like Diane holds it all inside and then it will come out and I'm more verbal. We like to say most of our arguments are started by me and perpetuated by her. You know, one of the things we teach on marriage is to not, is if you're able to, in the moment, if you're actually walking with the Lord and suddenly your spouse attacks you or says something because of whatever, is to, and I'm just going to read this from 1 Peter 3. I don't know, maybe we'll teach on this at the marriage conference, but we call this giving a blessing instead. Mm-hmm. So, and it's actually a quote of Psalm 34, which is a psalm of David, which is beautiful. So it's to sum up, let all be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit. Okay, that's really important. I think we should do a podcast on humility, what it is and what it isn't. If the spouse is actually walking in humility in that moment and kind-hearted, and this kind of came out of the blue, it says not returning evil for evil. That's what really is the worst thing.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you feel suddenly attacked, and so you're going to attack back, and then you're going to attack back, and you're going to attack. Pretty soon this thing like, now we're really fighting, and all it started off was, well, I told you, you didn't get her at 5:15 when you said you would, you know, or whatever, and now we're talking about something bigger. Or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead. For you were called for the very purpose that you might inherit a blessing. And then this is what I love. For let him who means, this is a quote of Psalm 34, him who means to love life, who doesn't want to love life and see good days? I want to have good days. Refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking guile. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous and his ears attend to their prayer. So I think that if you're able to, in that moment, resist returning evil for evil and with the power of the Holy Spirit,
that's good.
Say something kind like, I see you're real, really, I don't know, upset right now.
Choose your words carefully.
You know, be careful.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to help or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, something that can diffuse it and say, and what I love about you is whenever you get like this, you're not going to stay this way. You know, I used to watch Luis Palau, whom I loved. You know, he's fiery Latin. I mean, he's preaching all over the world. He was a, you know, Latin macho man. He was a strong man.
Yeah.
And, you know, he would tell you he struggled with a temper.
Yeah.
And I would see him in situations where he, you know, you'd intense. See that come out of him. But then every time I'd be with him the next day and he would say, this morning as I was with the Lord, he convicted me, and I saw this guy is walking with the Lord. And I think that if you know you've got a godly spouse and they have that moment of, you know, flesh or, you know, something that came out that shouldn't have been there because they're becoming more and more like Jesus. We're being saved from the power of our flesh on a daily basis. I just think if one of the spouses can give a blessing instead, it can diffuse the situation more quickly. Mm-hmm. And if you're not able to do that, our good friend Jim Lendy, which we all love to pieces, you know, gave us a tool, was more for Diane than me because I'm the one that like, I want to resolve it. Okay, well, let's solve it right now. And she's not ready to solve it because she's still figuring feeling out what big, it is.
Feeling the big emotions.
She's feeling big emotions. Yeah. She's not even sure why she's feeling the big emotions. Yeah. So we came up with a word where she would say Selah, which means, that's a Bible word in the Psalms. It means pause and consider. And there would be like a musical interlude. Pause and consider. So God asks us all through the Psalms,
pause and consider what you just read.
Yes.
Or heard. And I think that helped.
But that word "sela" was supposed to be the key to stop everything.
We agreed together that meant stop the emotion, stop the argument. I need time to consider. Yeah. And then was Bill and Laurie Kise that taught us, if the one who says I need time to before I can talk about this, they need to be the one to come back and say, now I'm ready to talk about this. Because otherwise,
the
other one is saying
days later.
Yeah, we're not talking days later. Like maybe it's 15 minutes.
Yeah,
sure.
And by then you've been able to de-escalate a bit. And
good reminder.
But they're ready to talk about it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, I just think that's a what the Bible would say.
That's a very helpful, practical.
Yeah.
And if you say, well, I can't do that. I mean, no, I think you have the Holy Spirit. So you have the power available to do that. Mm-hmm. And that's where humility has to come in. Like, wow, I really wasn't walking with the Lord in that moment. I was thinking all about myself or whatever it might
be. Well, even maybe to one of the questions, kind of like the spousal role stuff. Yeah. I think it's interesting because times have changed and the pendulum the pendulum always swings generation to generation. And even in the last probably 10 years or so, I think stuff has changed even more, right? And so it's really interesting to think through all the ways that's changed. I would just say something that is interesting is I still see the pendulum swinging too far the other way. So, you know, you're being gracious and saying I'm helping. Well, my family needs my help in a very practical way. The needs of my kids, my family, my setup, it needs my attention in ways that maybe yours didn't at the time. Now, that doesn't mean could you have been more present? Could you guys have talked about that more in the sense of presence of stepping in more in certain ways? Sure. I think there's always room to come towards your spouse. But I also see guys that are guys and gals both that are still overdoing it either direction. So now you have dads that are just like, they have the full-time job. Maybe the spouse, the wife doesn't, but there's like a, hey, we share everything 50-50, but the load's not like fully split that way. Like there's still a lot going on. So I don't think it's a do everything the way that this other person does it or the way I do it or the way other people do it. I think it's looking at your spouse, your role and saying, how do we divide this up in a way that feels like we're sharing this load, but with understanding, because if you came to me all the time and didn't understand all the things I have going on with running an organization as an example, and you're like, no, I'm expecting you to do the same stuff I'm doing, like all the same amount, that would be really overwhelming. Yeah. And I don't want to even say unfair, but almost like, well, it doesn't always work 50-50. That doesn't always play out that way. It's not like I can always do the stuff she can do and vice versa. We don't have those. Yeah. We have different gifts. So it's interesting. I know that people have a lot to say, but I just wanted to set that up. I think spousal roles have changed and that's okay. But I don't think the goal is trying to figure out or trying to just get down in the middle, like, make sure you do your part. I woke up three nights with the baby. You wake up three nights with the baby.
That's so unhealthy.
The last one, you know.
Yeah.
Like it's a 50-50 deal when it should be a serving each other deal.
Yeah, it's tricky.
I think I like the word partnership than roles, because roles seems like this clearly defined, this is what I do, this is what you do, and we stay in our lane. But really, raising a family, being married, but being married while raising a family is requires so much partnership. Yeah. And when you think about like division of labor, really is what you're talking about, the labor that it takes to run a life, a home, to work, to run a house. You know, you think back to pre the Industrial Revolution. Everybody worked side by side all day long doing all the things and had their clear, these are the tasks you do, these are the tasks I do. But both mother and father worked together to take care of the home and the family. It was—
And the business.
Yes.
Which was usually agriculture.
It was combined side by side labor. We're all doing all the roles. And it wasn't until the Industrial Revolution, when men went to work and women stayed home, that those roles got split. And I think what we're seeing is that worked for a while. That was necessary for a good long while. As things have changed and now more often than not, both spouses are working.
Right.
That doesn't work anymore the way that it used to work.
Nope.
And so it makes me think of, I think it's Pete Scazzaro who talks about expectations are the huge things. I don't even think he talks about just in marriage, but just in relationships in general. And that expectations need to have three things. They need to be clear, they need to be spoken, and they need to be agreed upon. And I think the same thing comes down to our families and roles or partnership or who does what. Those expectations or those roles need to be clear, they need to be spoken, and they need to be agreed upon. Mm. And then I would add to that, in a family, they need to be reevaluated all the time.
Yes. Yeah.
Because what worked for us when our kids were little, or when we had two or three little kids, versus what the needs of our family and our home life are now, are very different. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I think it took me longer to catch up to the reality of the help that I needed. Took me longer than it did even him. And now we're in a new stage where I'm having to speak up more and say, wow, I can't do all of this. We got it, but I don't know the solution. We got to figure it out together.
Yeah.
And then life's moving so fast. We've not yet been able to get to the like agreed upon plan of, okay, here's what we should do. It's like the overwhelm just keeps coming. So I'm the one who has to keep bringing it up to say, we still need to figure this out. And so I think there are seasons where it takes a while to figure out what all of that should look like. But if it's not clear, spoken, agreed upon, and reevaluated all the time, you're going to set yourself up for a lot of tension and resentment, wishing your spouse was doing more of this or that. Mm-hmm. I also think, like, on a very practical level, a weekly meeting where you just talk about all the things that need to happen so that you're on the same page, so you know what needs to happen, where you agree upon and divide up, okay, can you do this? Can you do that? Is very helpful on just a practical level. Yeah. It's not fun. Those are not like
what you just fun said conversations. Is brilliant. And it never ends. Like, we don't have the complex life that you do now. We just have Trooper.
And our individual.
We did also talk a lot about your death over lunch.
That was also.
But I mean, we had to have this meeting. We're getting ready to have the entire Comer clan at our house, 19 people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we don't have enough bedrooms for everybody. So there's an Airbnb, all the complexity of it. And Diane's later than ever in getting to presents because we're all busy. So even at our stage and age, we had to have this meeting yesterday. We had what were the three? Clear. We
clear,
were trying to be
spoken
clear
and agreed upon.
Clear. We had to speak and we had to agree.
I might be butchering his three. I'm pretty sure I've got those right.
And we had
I know it's spoken and agreed upon.
And we
I
had think it's to clear. Work through since I can be like, just grab it. Let's go.
Yeah.
That she's going to be the primary, I said leader. She goes, well, you don't like that word. How about I'll be primarily responsible? Yes. So in a sense, I'm going to assist her more than she's going to assist. So we had to have this meeting just over Comer Christmas.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of moving parts for 19 people. So I think this is a skill you can develop now.
Yes.
And it's going to carry it through your whole life. It's never going to go away. You know, as long as you have children and eventually grandchildren. Mm-hmm. You're going to be having these meetings, which is, I think, really important.
And honestly, this is good leadership. This is good leadership training for both of you.
The weekly meeting is really important. So remember, we learned this from our mentors, Bill and Lori Kies. You know, Bill was a missionary, then he was training hundreds of missionaries all over the world. But she said, I knew that every Saturday morning, he's going to take me to breakfast. Mm-hmm. And I would keep my list of what I wanted to talk about. You know, so I'm not saying that was good that she had to. You know, but they had four kids, you know, and they raised four godly kids.
Four kids in 5 years.
The whole church knew about the Kies family. Like, I hope our kids are kind of like that family, you know.
Yeah.
But they had that weekly time where the two of them could sit down and talk about stuff. So I think finding that's.
Yeah.
I think
I do too. But I also think that you just have to be aware that I think one of you mentioned it changes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we are now in a completely different paradigm. And just the other day, like Phil mentioned, I'm later than I've ever been in Christmas. I'm always an advocate of getting as much done as early as possible because I love Christmas.
This is where you get it all from. This is where it's all.
It's because I love Christmas much.
No, in November, she's like, we're late. And I'm like, sweetheart.
No, not in November.
November. That is so true. That happened. You were like, oh my gosh, I need a list. I was like, it's not even December 1st. I don't have any idea what I'm asking for Christmas. And she was like, we have to get
on it.
And I'm like,
Brooke, by the way, which is one of the reasons I'm so far behind is I couldn't get anybody's list this year.
Yeah,
but honestly, I realized that I was looking at Christmas now the same way I did when I was a full-time at-home mom, where I basically did it all pretty much, you know, and we early would come up with the budget, but I did all the shopping. I did all the wrapping. I did all the cooking, all the cleaning, all the everything. But that's not our life anymore. Mm-hmm. I now spend many hours a week working work that I love. But So that Phil was just so easy to talk to about, okay, so what do we need to delegate? What can I not do this year? What can you take over instead? And we've done it in other things too. Like I've always been the cook. Phil loves to eat. I'm a little bit less enthusiastic about a big meal. I don't mean that in a bad way. But I mean, honestly, oftentimes by mid-morning, he's asking, what's for dinner?
Well, that's why you're asking me to smuggle snacks from my mom's house.
Yeah, exactly. Because she doesn't have time to make eight different cookies like you're going
to
have.
No, I used to make like eight different cookies.
You're right.
I'm fine with one kind of cookie. But honestly, just being able to flex over time and to be able to say, okay, we now need a little bit of a different division of labor. So for cooking, Phil was kind of having a moment of wishing that he could have some of my spaghetti and my chili.
Winter, of course.
Yeah. But I usually make him in really...
I wanted to be invited to your house for Sabbath dinner because I was driving Duke home from school. I go, so what's happening? Oh, it's Sabbath dinner tonight. We're having Dad's favorite spaghetti and garlic bread or something.
It was his birthday dinner.
I said, that's probably his birthday dinner on Sabbath night, right?
Well, it was made with spicy Italian sauces.
Yes.
In the sauce.
And I wanted to be invited, because she was gone. But I didn't want to be invited.
Oh,
I'm jokingly honest.
You should have texted me. I wouldn't have come. Give you a plate.
You were by yourself.
Matthew was there. Anyway, I wouldn't have come anyway.
So back to the spaghetti.
But I'm just saying.
We have to solve this family problem right now.
Spicy Italian. Yes.
We must be tired or something because we are really talking a lot.
I like it.
So I said, okay, I'll make spaghetti, but I usually make a huge, big batch at a time and freeze it in ball jars so that he can pull it out whenever he wants. But will you be my sous chef? So I'll make spaghetti anytime if I don't have to clean it up, if I don't have to cook, if I don't have to dice all of the onions. And
that's
he's great with that.
Tomorrow or Saturday. All in.
It's a great division of labor.
I like this.
I said, I'll be your sous chef anytime.
Can this be one of our clear, spoken, agreed upon expectations?
I do not like when you try to commit me to stuff while on air on a podcast. I am saying we will talk about this later.
Is that a little passive aggressive?
Yeah, I know exactly what she's doing. Trying to get me to commit. No, I actually do. No, I help with lots of stuff. Are you kidding? I do so many things. I'm not as much of a cook as you are.
Mm-hmm.
And our kids, I did teach Birdie the other night how to make quesadillas. Yes. And I have to tell you something. There's nothing more rewarding than teaching someone who really doesn't want to learn anything, but especially quesadillas. And I'm teaching her. I was like, this is how much? This
she
is
was
what you
so
do?
Proud of herself.
We're salting the, you know, one of the little tricks our friends showed us was you put a little salt on the pan before you put the tortilla down. So you butter some corn tortillas.
That. Game changer.
You put a little salt down. Then you put the tortilla, then the cheese, then the other tortilla. Obviously, anyone listening that's an adult understands this. But to an 8-year-old with special needs, this is a big deal.
It's a big deal.
And she was like making them. And then everyone was full. And she's like, Dad, I just love making that so much. Are you so hungry? And I was like, and I wasn't. And I was like, absolutely, I am. Of course. And she's like, do you want like two more? I was like, sure. I mean, I knew I wasn't going to eat them. But just, I was like, we're wasting this food. I didn't care. Like, was just so happy making these quesadillas. Even the next morning, she's like, can I make quesadillas? I was like, not for breakfast.
But that next day, she came over and I was making cookies with her.
Yeah.
And she gave me a step-by-step rundown tell me how her dad told her to make quesadillas.
There you go.
So
it was really, one of those cool moments that, you know, happened all of a sudden. You know, you didn't plan it, but it was awesome. And then last night I was talking to both the girls, and Duke and Scarlett are a little bit older now, and they had some of their friends over before youth group. So there's a bunch of high school and middle school age kids that are not just our kids in the house. And you had them over and you said, we'll do quesadillas. And so she told Birdie and Sloan, she's like, girls, you're on making quesadillas. And then Birdie was so elated. And then during that taught Sloan how to make quesadillas. We were in the car for a minute, Birdie and Sloan and I last night. And Birdie's trying to tell me like, so I made all the quesadillas. I really like when I put them down and they crackle. And I was like, she's like, no, that's not the word. I was like, you mean sizzle? And she goes, yes, I love when it sizzles. And then Sloan's like, yeah, I did it. I learned how to do it. And Sloan goes, but I still got to work on my flip. I'm not doing good on my flip yet. It's hard to get it all the way over. And Bernie's like, yeah, yeah, she's got to work on her flip. But she's doing it. Like, they were just dead serious. Anyway, okay. I don't know how we got on that.
I have a one-up one for everybody. I was talking to a young woman who has her own small business, very small business. She's trying to get off the ground. She has two young children, and she has a side business to add to the income. Her husband works full-time. And her kids are pretty little, so they go to bed early. They together every night put the kids to bed after dinner. And then every night they go through and clean the house together. Just, you know, I'm sure they're not scrubbing in the corners, but every night together.
I can't believe you said this.
They go through the house.
Can you edit this out? Edit this out, please.
I just thought that would have saved my
That's just what I'm longing to do every night.
Let me just say something, though. We don't do that.
If you really love your wife.
No, we don't do that. But acts of service is a huge way Elizabeth is loved. So whether it's enough for you're just sitting there calling it.
I'm really liking this idea that she just threw out.
You are never expected to do everything. That said, it needs to be identified that in marital situations, maybe one spouse has a higher need than the other for a certain level of cleanliness.
Yes.
And it's sometimes unfair to put your oppressive desire on your spouse as the standard is the one who has the highest standard and sometimes doesn't maybe, you know, isn't open to talking about doing things a little differently. So I'm always on helping and always about cleaning or always whatever.
You
but
are.
It's interesting though, because like that's a weird dynamic and I don't want to talk any more about it or we'll get in an argument, but
I actually think we've come a long way in that in me recognize in me not putting my need on other people and recognizing what I need to ask help for, what I need to just do myself because it's only important to me and it's unfair to put on other people. But then I think you've really grown over the years. I mean, this is just the beauty of marriage year after year after year and talking about stuff of you've really learned. Part of it is a way to love me and certain things you've just taken on. I don't even remember when, somewhere in our homeschooling journey, this was probably like a year or two ago, somehow we stumbled upon, he was asking how, I said the mornings are just so hard to get everybody like out of bed and dressed and the normal morning like routine and chores done and to not start school at like noon. Like it's just, they're just hard. And so he started making the bed in the morning. And tidying up a few things. It doesn't take very long. But when I was able to, again, had to say it out loud and we had to agree upon it to say, it would be really great if I could count on two things every morning. If you could get the girls dressed and if you could make the bed. I said, they're like not time consuming things, but something about it takes a huge like stress off of me. It's hard for Birdie to get dressed in the morning. So I would like set out all the clothes the night before. So he's not having to hunt for clothes. Mm-hmm. And just like being able to communicate clearly about those things. And for, I had to say, but I need it to be really consistent for it to be helpful. That I just know those two things are going to happen. And you've done a wonderful job, like being as consistent as you can. It's not 100% of the time. And he lets me know if he can't get to it. Hey, I don't have time this morning.
Well, life happens. But
yeah, and that's a silly example. But I highlight that only because so often there are things that are frustrating in our marriage are the silly little things, like that.
Yeah.
That if we can just have really clear conversation around and be able to then continue to have dialogue about is really helpful.
Dishwasher, I heard something
she
about
whispered dishwasher to me.
Oh yeah.
Dishwasher.
You know what? My kids tell me you empty the dishwasher because you empty it in the morning when they're still sleeping.
And it's
and they're
so
like,
loud.
Wakes so noisy. And empties the dishwasher in the morning. And I'm like, well, it's his house. He can do that. And they're like, yeah, but why is he doing that in the morning? And I was like, I don't know. Let's just ask Bob.
And he doesn't do anything quiet.
No.
It's not really fair. You're unplugged half the time. He can do anything at any volume and not bother anybody.
I didn't know they could hear it, so I'll be quieter.
You don't know. I'm just, They laugh.
It was a bigger problem in your last house because it would literally wake them all.
Yeah, but I don't think it does. It was well, that's the last thing I do. I run it at night too. And then while I'm making coffee, I empty it because she really appreciates it. And I kind of like it. It's methodical.
What do you like about it?
Because you're done and it's done.
Yeah. It's like, I like that about
everything is put away.
Vacuuming is very therapeutic. That and mowing the lawn.
But how did it start, Phil?
Oh, I don't want to say that. I don't want to say that. We've said that before.
Okay.
Oh, no, you can if
we'll
you want.
We'll just leave it a secret.
No, you can say it if you want.
I bet you it started with a tension point is my guess.
No, it didn't, actually.
Oh, really? Now I'm curious. No. Now I can't remember, so you should say it.
I was just a morning I was doing it, and she was over reading. You must be reading your Bible or something.
I was in the family room.
Oh, I remember.
In the family room.
I don't want to hear this. Plug your ears.
Phil. That is so sexy.
Gross. Yeah,
I'm done.
Okay, we'll leave it there.
Next question.
But truth be told, that's a great motivator. That's a huge motivator for any man. If she started telling me things like that about anything, I'd be like, that's my job forever. That's my job forever.
Honestly, he has emptied the dishwasher every day, ever since then. It's been a long time.
So ladies that are listening, take that as a challenge. I dare you. Oh, that's really funny. It feels a little manipulative, but I like it.
But honestly, you know, when you're up early and your husband's doing something that is just a boring job that you've done a thousand times, and he knows that you kind of just don't like that job, and he just does it without being told, without being hinted at, without being asked, there is something so appealing about that just draws out the love and value.
Well, I know we're kind of all over the place with that question conversation, but two quick things and then we'll close today. But one that I just think is very practical. Let's just get very practical. How to prioritize each other when you're both really tired. I'm laughing because I was like, oh, that's I know we're in different stages of life. I would just say for Elizabeth and I think that's probably a very real time question. Mm-hmm. How to prioritize each other when you're both exhausted. I think right now it's mostly in little ways. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Obviously there's the big ways that we all talk about. I think it's in the little things right now is what I'm experiencing. But how about you guys? How do you prioritize each other? Because like in our stage of life with kids, with the nuances of everything, it's just a season where I think you first have to just say, we want to prioritize each other. And then I think it's finding time within your life and schedule. I think just don't underestimate the power of the little things. I know that this is really stupid and it is actually pretty, really silly, but I also think it's been helpful. I think you fall asleep really fast at night. If I cuddle her, like if I'm like close to her and cuddling her, she'll fall asleep like in a second. Mm-hmm. And it's just been little, but we've just been like more purposefully like, okay, let's like fall asleep. Let's just like have a moment to cuddle, just fall asleep. And I don't know about you, but for me, it's been a huge, like it's weirdly simple and super connecting. It's like, we're not talking because we don't have any energy to talk. I don't want to say anything else. We've talked all day to each other, to kids, to having to deal with situations. Yeah. So that's been actually something that's so little, but I think that's just one of the ways that we've found, that's our thing, to prioritize each other. It's the little stuff.
Yeah, and finding moments to connect. Find the times in your day where you're not as tired. Mm-hmm. Like what he's highlighting is nighttime is just not a good time for us right now. And so we have to find other times where we do have energy, where we do have clarity of mind to be able to have not just a like to-do list conversation, you know? Yeah. And so, again, to the seasonality of parenting, mm-hmm. I remember when our kids were younger, all of our time to connect was at like 7 o'clock when they went to bed. Mm-hmm. Those were glorious years when we could have a conversation, spend time together, and we could watch a show all before 9 o'clock. Yeah. It was wonderful. Those days are long gone. Nobody is asleep by 9 o'clock. I want to be asleep by 9 o'clock. So we don't have like this, the kids are in bed and we have several hours before it's time to go. We don't have that anymore. And so it has to look different now. And so I think it's just finding what season am I in? What times during the day do I have energy? And is there a way to link our schedules to make that more possible?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Last one really quick. How do you receive feedback from your spouse in a healthy way? How do you receive feedback from your spouse in a healthy way? So constructive criticism maybe might be, how do you receive that in a healthy way? I think there's two things. You have to also give it in a healthy way.
That's what I was going to say. Is it being given in a healthy way?
Well, we did a whole episode
way.
On that. We can link that in the show notes.
Which one? I can't remember.
Care before criticism.
Oh, yeah, we did. Recently, we did do something on that. Actually, I think that's a great way to respond to that is we will put the link in the show notes for that episode because that was a marriage episode and we went at length about that very topic. But I do think a lot of care is very helpful, doing things with care, which that whole episode's about. So we won't go into it here, but link is in the show notes for that episode. Make sure to check that out. And thank you for all your questions. Everybody asking questions. So many good questions. We have many more that we'll put into our long list of questions. But thank you, everybody, for asking those questions. Mm-hmm. Phil and Diane, Elizabeth, thank you all for responding and just being honest and vulnerable. Obviously, this is both fun and hard and challenging. It's our life. And a little bit of it is on display. But we're also happy to share our blunders with you all. Mm-hmm. And we're learning, too, still. And I love Phil and Diane. Mm-hmm. One of the things I think you do great is being honest about the fact that even though you've been married 47 years?
46.
46 years. And they're always out of year.
46 and a half.
46 and a half. You're still learning and you're still figuring it out. You're still being open and honest about that. And that's just encouraging because it makes all of us that are not there yet know that it's still.
And one of the things is about getting older is you can look back and start to say, oh, I missed it there. And maybe if I can be honest about how I missed it, mm-hmm. I might be able to alert somebody else to a common pitfall. Yeah. And that's really satisfying.
Yeah.
That's really satisfying.
Well, it's very helpful. So thank you everyone for listening today.